This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb in for Jane Lindholm. It was a violent collision millions of light years away, the likes of which forges the gold in your jewelry and the uranium in our stockpile of nuclear bombs. We're talking about the collision of two dead stars, neutron stars to be specific, that slammed into each other at nearly the speed of light. Scientists studying gravitational waves observed the collision back in August and alerted the scientific community around the globe to train their telescopes on this interstellar crash called a kilonova. On Monday, scientists released a flurry of papers and research about what they learned from watching this massive collision of dead stars. And while the scientific insights are profound, the cutting-edge instruments measuring the resulting gravitational waves are a big part of the story, too. Here to talk us through what these observations mean and how the detection of gravitational waves played a part is Robert Caldwell, a theoretical physicist studying cosmology at Dartmouth College. He also teaches physics and astronomy to graduate and undergraduate students. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
Now, before we get to the event itself, it is worth noting that the observation of this event comes on the heels of a landmark discovery last year about gravitational waves, which proved yet again how prescient a genius Albert Einstein was. Can you give us, for those of us not steeped in theoretical cosmology, which I think is most of us, a basic understanding of what gravitational waves are, how they played a big part in the news this week?
Well, this is the culmination of a project that's been going on for roughly 30 years to directly detect gravitational waves. And what they are, you can think of them as literally ripples in space-time. And if you make a picture in your mind of waves traveling on the surface of a pond, that's a pretty nice picture to help illustrate what's going on. They are just like light is a ripple in an electromagnetic field. This is the gravitational analog. And when it is produced by colliding two black holes or two neutron stars, it travels at the speed of light, and we feel it instead of sensing it with an electromagnetic antenna. We feel it as a motion of objects here on Earth, almost like an earthquake.
That's amazing. And this is something that Einstein theorized about many, many years ago, but he wasn't sure that they could ever actually be detected with instruments.
That's right. For a long time, there was doubt that these mathematical equations were really representing something physical, but there was a change in thinking and understanding of the significance of these waves 50 years ago or so, and people began to dedicate their scientific careers to trying to detect these objects, and it really paid off. The timing is incredible. The Nobel Prize was awarded for the team that led this this experimental discovery.
Yeah, really timely for sure. And you talked before about two black holes colliding, which can produce gravitational waves.
Right.
Black holes, again, something that, unless I'm mistaken, has not actually been observed, but we know is out there. They have such pull that they can suck anything into them, even light, that can't escape from it?
Yeah, that's right. Well, we know of plenty of black holes. There's one at the center of our galaxy, but we only know about it indirectly because you can't see them for obvious reasons. And there's a whole, I like to say there's a dark world out there of black holes, and the original gravitational wave detection from about 2 years ago, they sensed the gravitational waves coming from the collision of two massive black holes.
And of course, the most recent one we're talking about today, two dead stars colliding and producing these waves. Amazing. What did that look like to those lucky enough to have access to the world's most high-powered telescopes?
Well, LIGO was really lucky because it saw the in-spiral of these two stars. Now, these stars weigh a little bit more than the mass of the sun, but they are compactified into a region that's about 20 kilometers in diameter each. So it's very dense matter, incredibly compactified. And it looked like, the spiraling you could make an analogy with two ice skaters spinning around each other, holding arms and spinning faster and faster. And that's what LIGO saw initially and then alerted all the optical and other wavelength telescopes to, hey, take a look at this. And, the analogy with the ice skaters kind of ends there because the neutron stars slammed into each other and produced a huge explosion, which the optical telescopes were able to see as a flash of light across many wavelengths of the spectrum.
Now, I should mention that LIGO is short for, and I'm probably not going to get this right, Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
How do you like that? I nailed it. So that's where this discovery was made, as you're referring to with LIGO. And then
that's
there was
right.
this burst of papers and conferences on Monday about this event and the collision itself. It was observed back in August, but where and when did these two stars actually crash into each other?
Well, in a galaxy far, far away, about 40 megaparsecs away. So I think that's roughly a billion light years or so.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah.
and it's just reaching us now.
That's right. Light is not immediate. All good things take time.
Well, the big question again for those of us not well-versed in physics is, what does this mean? What can it tell us about the universe that we don't already know?
Well, it tells us a number of things that are really exciting, and it also touches on my research I'll get to in a moment. But one of the things it tells us is where many of the heavy elements come from that we see in our solar system, that we see on Earth, because in the collision of these two neutron stars, they saw the spectra indicating the presence of heavy metals that were produced, including gold, uranium, plutonium. And this is a source for many of the rare earth elements that go into our really strong magnets.
And what about the research that you alluded to that you're doing?
Yeah, well, this is the first time that the light, that electromagnetic light, has been seen from a gravitational wave event. And this gives us a new way to measure the size and the rate of expansion of the universe. And one of the things that I'm really interested in is figuring out why the expansion of the universe is accelerating. It was discovered about 20 years ago that the expansion has been speeding up for the past 7 or 8 billion years. It's not slowing down. The Big Bang is not running out of gas. It's picking up steam.
Now, this reminds me of, because this is how I relate to things, I'm reminded of the scene in the movie Annie Hall when a young Woody Allen, you know what I'm talking about here? He stops doing his homework. He loses all interest in anything because he discovers that, as you said, the universe is expanding and it's going faster and faster. He realizes
right.
it will ultimately... What's the point? Everything is going to destroy... Is he right? How does this all end?
Well... Yes, right. How does it all end? So the expansion of the universe doesn't, I don't see a way that it affects our day-to-day existence, except psychologically in justifying whether you should do your homework. I will say that there is the possibility where we don't know as of yet if the expansion is speeding up fast enough or slow enough for to dictate what is the ultimate fate of the universe. Right now it looks like the universe might be expanding at a faster and faster rate, but it may just lead in the future to a big chill scenario. But there's a possibility that if the expansion rate is accelerating fast enough, it could lead to a big rip, where the universe literally tears itself apart in a finite amount of time, which is, hundreds of billions of years in the future. But that could affect whether you want to do your homework or not, I suppose.
I suppose that could be one of the better excuses you could write in your paper, whether or not your teacher would accept that, who really knows. What is the next step for observation tools like LIGO? I mean, where do we go from here after this amazing discovery?
Well, this is opening up a new branch of astronomy, gravitational wave astronomy, and LIGO is going to be seeing more events. It's offline right now. They're tuning up the instrument, I understand, and they're going to come back online in a short time and be more sensitive. And I see this in the big picture as one step in a process of new observatories opening and harvesting, detecting gravitational waves and using it to learn about the universe in a new way. There's one type of gravitational wave source that I'm really excited about, and that is a gravitational wave background. It's sort of like a faint hum of gravitational waves coming from all directions, and it is potentially a remnant of the earliest fraction of a second of the universe.
The earliest fraction of a second of the universe. Amazing.
That's right.
Almost the Big Bang before the Big Bang.
That's right. It's if we could detect this, we might be able to learn something about, where the Big Bang came from.
Hmm. Robert Caldwell is a theoretical physicist studying cosmology at Dartmouth College. Thank you so much for being with us here today before the end of the universe could prevent it from happening. I really appreciate it. Absolutely.